Marsh's MR with the laws about the Kohanim. We're told that Sanhedrin had to determine which Kohen was eligible and which would be unfortunately ineligible to enter and serve in the Avodah. And they would consider A, the Yichus of the family, so that would be the genetic disqualifiers. And then there could also be certain blemishes, right? Certain problems with the person's body, irregularities that would disqualify. It says if someone came in and was about to get test, right? They're going to do an investigation whether he was a bona fide Kohen, right? If, when they did the investigation and they determined his yichus was mixed up, let's say, with chalolim, he would have to put on black garments and leave the courtyard. If the person was deemed to be a kosher Kohen, he would dress in white garments. Now that would obviously be after that one who had passed the genetic test, or the genealogy test, also passed that his body did not have the infirmities that disqualified him. When a Kohen was coming to do a voda for the first time, they made a suda, right? For family and friends. They praised the Rabbona Shalom, blessed be HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for the fact that no disqualified Kohen was ever found in our own seed, and blessed be HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who chose Aaron and his sons to serve him in the Holy of Holies. A Kohen who unfortunately became Tomei, right? Either because he had to be involved with a human corpse or an animal carcass some way made him Tomei. As long as he was Tomei, he couldn't do the Avoda. He could not eat parts of the sacrifices. And Truma could also not be eaten by a Kohen who was Tomei. The Torah then gives a description of what the requirements are, right, about Truma. Truma would be separated by a Jewish farmer from the crops. Generally, it was 1/50th or 2%. And this now had a degree of Kedusha. It had to be given to a Kohen. And, as we just learned, only a Kohen who was Tahar, ritually pure, could eat Truma. The following rules apply. A Kohen, when Tomei, can't eat it. And if he did, he would be punished, they say, with death at the hand of a HaKadosh Baruch Hu. A non-Kohen is always forbidden from eating Truma. A Kohen's Eved, a Kanani who he bought as a servant, a non-Jew, is allowed to eat of Truma because he's considered property of the Kohen and therefore was allowed to eat it. A Kohen who could not be circumcised, and that case unfortunately arose with hemophiliacs, right? Where they knew the person was, either because prior brothers had never clotted after a Brislin had passed away. But an Orel, one who still has the foreskin, is disqualified. Obviously, a Chalal, right? The son of a Kayin from a forbidden wife, right? And anyone down that chain, the Chalal's son, grandson, etc., they are precluded. A Chalala, being the daughter from such a union down in generations, is also denied. And we also know that when a Kohen's daughter marries a non-Kohen, she no longer can eat truma because her status now reverts to the status of her husband. If she became divorced and never had children, or any children she had predeceased the divorce, she can return to eating truma. A Kohen's wife and children obviously can eat truma, but they've got to be tahar. They tell a story, I guess it's a medrash or it's historical. It's there was a Kohen who allowed his animals to eat truma he was given. A fire broke out in his house and it consumed 30 animals, 60 garments, 24 jugs of wine, 10 jugs of oil, and other valuables. The Kohen came to the Chachamim of that day and he said, "This is what happened. Why did this happen? I need to know why I suffered this tragedy." The Chachamim were sitting there and they were thinking, why did it happen? As they were sitting there, in came someone, right, with a shaila. And the individual, maybe he just became a Kohen or whatever, and he said, "What are the rules with the truma I have? May I feed it to an animal?" And this Kohen answered, "Well, of course you can." And this person asking the question said, "Are you certain? Do you know the halacha?" And he said, "I myself did it." The Chachamim heard this and they said, "Baruch Hashem, who's a true judge, he gives out deserved punishment. Truma, challah, other kadosh food left over is not for animal consumption. You were punished because you did not treat truma with the proper respect required, and that's why you deserve to be punished." But he said, "Hold on," this Kayang. He said, "I remember when I was, I guess, learning somewhere, it said grains of truma can be given to domesticated animals, beasts and fowl." And the Chachamim said, "Yes, but this is a limited rule. We're only talking about inferior types of grain, which would normally be animal fodder, and which are normally not eaten by human beings. You feed your animals hay. If somebody somehow gave you hay for truma, right, you can use it." They conclude that from the story, we see there obviously were certain Kohanim who did not know appropriate halachas and are therefore apt to err. And the author of this Sefer says, we should think that we each have an obligation to know what halachas govern our day-to-day life, some of which are complex, but we're required to learn so that we know what to do. We're told that for any animal to be appropriate for a kohen, it had to be perfectly fit. It had to be at least 8 days old. It had to live through a Shabbos. And there are certain other prohibitions. It says an animal cannot be shechted on the same day that its mother was shechted. You can't do that. Hashem tells us, just as HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a standard of compassion, he wants us to have it. He says, in doing this mitzvah, it's going to help us develop compassion. However, and as we learned in the Gemara this week, in Megillah, we could look at this and say, oh, are God's laws, quote, all compassion? Is that the motivation for mitzvahs? And they say, we are not allowed to jump to that conclusion. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's halachas are for reasons HaKadosh Baruch Hu ascertained were important. The fact that we can learn something from them, that's, as we say, a bezundere maisa. That's something else. But we cannot attribute our thought of why a mitzvah exists to the mitzvah. And we're told, I can't remember where it is, that even when a Kadosh Baruch Hu says, like, for example, with sukkahs, l'man yedu d'raifeichem, keep the sukkahs hashavti. I'm telling you, eating sukkahs because I gave whatever sukkahs were to Klal Yisrael in the desert, it does not mean that's the sole motivation. It is a motivation only. It says, when Nebuchadnezzar, the king, captured Yerushalayim, the king said to Yahu and his sons ran through an underground passage. They were caught, and they were taken to Bavel. Zedekiah said, execute me so I shouldn't have to see my sons being killed. And his son said the other. The cruel Zedekiah said, Zedekiah's sons are to be put to death in front of their father's eyes. Then we're going to gouge out his eyeballs, and he will be led blindly to Bavel. And that's what happened. Zedekiah said, listen, all Jews who can hear me. Yirmiyahu had told me that you are going to go to Bavel. You are going to die in Bavel, but your eyes will never see it. I didn't listen. I ignored that prophecy, and you now can see it's coming true. Well, here's a tough one. I'm just going to read this. The author of this Sefer writes, why do the wicked delight in all types of sadism which arouse horror and shudders? Let's think of Hamas. Let's think of the Nazis. Let's think of Nebuchadnezzar. And he writes, Compassion is a natural trait implanted by the Rabboni Shel Olam in a human soul. Someone who acts cruelty is troubled and disturbed by this inclination inside. He, for whatever reason, his psychology doesn't let him have rest from it. Therefore, if I can't rest from this, and it bothers me that I think there's some type of compassion with Minnie, I've got to go to the other extent and be the most terrible barbarian possible. And he says, that is why the Torah again and again gives us rules to be compassionate, to understand that compassion is a natural feeling HaKadosh Baruch Hu put into us, and if God forbid we have a problem with it, we've got to seek help. It's something we're supposed to be, like we're supposed to open our eyes and see, open our mouths and speak. We have to be basically compassionate, or primarily. It says, we know that when the Shlosh HaRagolim occurred in Eretz Yisroel, there were tremendous numbers of korbonos brought. Right? On those days, a farmer who was selling his herds, and if he was going to sell an animal together with the animal it gave birth to, had to let the buyer know. So the buyer should not have the avera of shechting them both on the same days. It says, if the mother animal had been bought by a kala's family for a wedding, the chosen should not be allowed to buy the offspring. Or he had to be told, you can only use that for the second Sheva Brachas honor, something like that.
You donate it as a carbon, but not tell them not to shaft it to the next day?
I guess you could. I think, but it seems that they had to have specific notice of which animal was precluded to be shechted on that day for whatever reason. The Parsha then deals with what we call the most serious avera, Chilul Hashem, desecrating HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name. Right? Hashem says, V'yichalel Hashem Kodshi, you cannot desecrate my holy name. And it says, every Yid has this commandment. It says, if a non-Jew gathers 10 Jewish adults and tells someone, I am going to give you a choice. I'm going to kill you, or what I want you to do is an avera. Here is pork. You're going to have 2 pork hamburgers. Because this is now Pfarhesia, in front of 10 other Jews, this takes on the status of the 3 cardinal sins, right? Adultery, murder, and idol worship, and you've gotta basically forego your life. Also, during times, he says, of religious persecution, right? There are times, and I don't know the getter, what the rules are, there are times when forced to be done something by, let's say, the Roman Catholic missionaries, God cursed their souls, and all the other terrible individuals, that you've got to forego your life rather than submit. It says, Let us say there's a Jew who, in his right mind, decides, I am going to do an Aveira, not because I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to do it because I want to make God angry. I want to defy HaShadosh Baruch Hu's will. That's considered a Chilul Hashem. And you've got to forego your life rather than doing it. And then we have the very, very high comment that's made very often with respect to the behavior of Jewish Orthodox Jews. We could be guilty, chas v'shalom, of Chilul Hashem in the public thoroughfare. When a Yid visibly cheats a goy, it's a Chilul Hashem. Right? And there are other examples like that. A Jew acts inappropriately in front of a number of people, non-Jewish, in front of the cameras in today's day and age. It says, Rav, who was an Amora, said, if I delay paying the butcher for what I'm buying, it's a Chilul Hashem. They will say, look at this righteous tzaddik. Look what he does. Rav Yochanan, another of the Maroyim, said, I would be guilty of Chilul Hashem if people saw me walking around and they didn't see me engaged in Torah. I guess they didn't see me in thought or whatever. They saw me simply strolling. And it says, obviously, each person is on a different level. There are no absolute standards to behavior. God knows that everybody is prone to error. God doesn't castigate us for errors, right? And we've got to do the best we can. And there may be times, unfortunately, when we may do something that's not pristine and seems to be inappropriate. And is it potentially a Chilul Hashem? We would hope not, right? But again, we're only human. Like, and how we balance this is a very, very tenuous, difficult situation. The answer is, of course, that all we can do is the best we can and bear in mind what some of the parameters are. Okay, I got to leave a few minutes early, so I'm going to stop.